And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels. It's Tuesday, March 5th. Derek Van Riper here with Eno Saris. Eno, live from Peoria. Are you on the backfields in Peoria?
Yes, I am. I was looking for a place to set up, and I had almost had one, except that Yuki Matsui had a bullpen session today, and so the comfortable seats that I was sitting on that were, you know, kind of shaded were all taken up by the press conference area. Plus, I was sitting where players eat, and I thought it might be weird to give analysis on players. At least it wasn't be them. It wouldn't be talking about the Padres in front of the Padres. But so that's what's going on here. Matsui looks healthy. He threw a good pen. His back didn't bother him. Got to see a Musgrove pen. Talked to Xander Bogaerts for a second. So, a successful day at camp. I'm on my way to a sunburn, as you've mentioned. It's probably happening right now.
Yeah, send SPF 50. Send some aloe. It's going to be a burn happening while we record this show. The hazards of being a baseball writer at spring training. Got to get the hat. Got to get the sunscreen. Mm-hmm. Spring training, Eno, day two, checking in live from San
always
Diego.
Always making rookie mistakes, dude.
Well, you know, there's always opportunity for growth. That's the way to look at it. One follow-up real quick before we get to our team previews. Today, we're going to break down the Red Sox, the Marlins, and the Nationals. We did get the long-anticipated update from the surgeon that performed knee surgery on Ronald Acuna Jr. a few years back. Dr. Neil Ultrush confirmed the initial diagnosis of irritation in Acuna's meniscus, which is great news because that means he's likely going to be ready for opening day. So as we discussed yesterday, no need to panic, no need to drop him out of that top spot. You can maybe close the gap slightly between Acuna and the field, but he still probably belongs in that 1-1 position given the confirmation of that initial diagnosis.
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't panic here on the show. It would have been easy to panic, but nobody said any of the bad words when it comes to possible surgery or anything torn. So irritation of the meniscus is one of the probably the best outcome he could have had. And he said, I got boss today on camera. So I think that means he's ready to go.
Yeah. I think he was explaining. He said he felt good enough. He wanted to play today. His bosses don't want him to play today, I think is what I took from the video.
Okay. All right. Oh, I see.
He was playing with the assembled media a little bit. He was pretending to use his bat as a cane at first and kind of laughing. So I mean, compared to the mood around the uncertainty 24 hours ago, I think things have taken a turn for the significantly better with the Ronald Acuna Jr. discourse. Speaking of Discord, that's open. We'll put the link in the show description. If you haven't joined that already, jump on in there. We got some big announcements coming soon. Our listener league close to getting off the ground, so we'll have all the details for that available once it is confirmed, but that is just probably days away from being announced, so something to be excited about. Let's kick it off, though, with the Red Sox preview. Closing out the AL East, this is the team projected to finish last. It does make sense when you start to look into some of their flaws. You know, they had a strange offseason. Like, they made some additions, but then they traded away Chris Sale, which I thought was kind of like, hey, what are you doing? Are you playing the middle when you're not actually a mid-pack team? Or are they fancying themselves as an actual long shot wild card contender when many of us are looking at them as the clear bottom team in a strong AL East right now?
Yeah, it's strange to bring in a new GM that purports to be was a director of pitching in Chicago and be someone that might attack pitching and make pitching better. And then he goes out and trades away his ace. You know, like just a little bit discongruous. I do think that like some of the peripheral moves they've done, to set this up, like the Verdugo trade, that was for arms. You know, and it wasn't for arms that are going to obviously be great because it was only 1 year of Verdugo. But Weissert is going to probably help in the pen. And I believe the other pitcher who came back has a chance to start. So he was trying to maybe just get more quantity in there. And that might have been some of the idea there. The switch of Giolito and Sale seems to have backfired fairly considerably. We have some news that Lucas Giolito has some UCL issues and may start the season on the IL. So that one didn't work out for them.
Yeah, partial UCL tear and flexor strain for Lucas Giolito was the official diagnosis. I saw that from Jeff Passan at ESPN earlier today. So that could be a pretty lengthy absence depending on the course of treatment for Giolito, but at least some kind of absence to begin the season. And I would say this was a rotation that had some competition for its last spot or two anyway. At least it wasn't a certainty who their starting five was going to be, even if there were five clear favorites. When you look at it from a how much do these guys go for in draft, what are the cost in drafts, you know, where do they go? Nick Pivetta still carries the earliest ADP. He's been a buzzy pitcher in fantasy circles before. He has broken the hearts of fantasy managers before. Is there a reason to believe that the fantasy community will not have its heart broken by Nick Pivetta this time around?
I think the mix is legitimately different. If you look at StatCast, which does a better job, probably the best job of any system out there of identifying sweepers, you notice that he did legitimately add a sweeper and start using it a lot by the end of the season. I myself can't really see this graph right now. Because I'm looking at it through a fence. But I do believe that it shows increased sweeper usage by the end of the season. And what I like about that is it really gives him three breaking balls. And though his fastball has been great, I think one of the things that's important for him is keeping people off that fastball, not being super predictable with that fastball, being able to throw the slider for strikes when people are expecting fastballs, and then finishing people off with the curveball and sweeper. I think this is a legit mix. He's always had the stuff / stuff plus to succeed. Now he's putting together the arsenal to succeed. I think it's just a tough park. I think he's going to be somebody that in Seattle might have like a 3.6 ERA this year. But in Boston, it's probably going to be like a 3.9 or a 4.1 or something, just because it's a tough, tough home park, a tough division. I think he's a good pitcher.
Yeah, good pitcher in a difficult situation makes a lot of sense. I wonder with the added sweeper, if the new mix of pitches in general gives him a better chance to suppress homers against lefties. That was the big problem. 23 home runs allowed last season by Nick Pivetta. 16 of them were to lefties. Right, lefties slugged .509 against them. The sweeper won't fix that.
but
the pitch mix in general being different, I wonder if that's enough to make something work.
Yeah. I mean, he seems like a candidate for a split or two because he's over the top and hasn't really found a good changeup. But I think, you know, the occasional freeze take sweeper can work to lefties if he's careful with it. And then just generally, being a three pitch pitcher to lefties with the harder slider, I think works too.
Yeah, we saw a cutter pop up last season. I think the cutter would be the pitch against lefties that could actually give him something different, get a little more weak contact, have that wrinkle that maybe wasn't there previously. You mentioned the trade, the Verdugo trade. Richard Fitz is the pitcher that came back. He got up to 152 and two-thirds innings at AA last season in the Yankee system. So as far as being a full workload starter, that's something Fitz brings to the table. I imagine he opens at AAA, but given their needs, he should get a chance in the big leagues at some point this year.
He's now. Right? I mean, he could be Mata or Fitz. Those are their two guys. And, you know, on average, your sixth starter gets like 75 to 100 innings. So, you know, there's some innings out there for you if you want them. Boston's a tough place to go innings farming.
Yeah, you look at the rotation. Bayo maybe gets not an opening day, or Pivetta. Probably Pivetta at this point. but in some order, that's your 1-2. Cutter Crawford, someone that the model has liked for a long time, his role looks a bit more stable, and now with the Giolito injury, you could probably see both Garrett Whitlock and Tanner Houck in the rotation together, whereas previously that may have been a either-or sort of toss-up for the last spot, with the loser ending up in the bullpen.
Yeah, I need some numbers on Whitlock's fastball, because it really, really fell off last year, and it kind of went past the point of where you can be successful with a bad fastball. He definitely has two secondaries, the slider and change, that are good, but you know, I've fallen for this kind of player a lot in the past, and there is some sort of threshold that the fastball needs to get to make it work, and I'm not sure he's there. Houck is the one I like better. I think Houck has the fastball. This camp, he came to camp and everyone said that he had the best velo in camp, you know, vis-a-vis last year. And, you know, I think now with the splitter, a second year with the splitter, most people tell me that the splitter takes a little time to get used to. And, you know, so that's something that I think, you know, I was talking to Jordan Hicks about his splitter in San Francisco camp yesterday, and he was just like, yeah, you know, I basically started throwing it for good last year, so I think it's going to be better this year. And I think that's how I feel that Houck is going to go forward, because he's like, he kills righties, and it's just all about, can he figure something out with lefties? With that slot, it's something that the lefties can see forever, so he has to come up with something that that'll work.
Yeah, I think with Houck, it's at least for shallow leagues, a streaming arm that you want to consider, even like a 10-team league, unless he's going up against a lineup that can be stacked with lefties, because his dominance against righties has now spanned over most of his career in the big leagues. I think you can trust that as a skill that he actually has with that mix. The bullpen could change depending on what happens with Kenley Jansen. Kenley's working back from a lat injury. A lot of trade rumors swirling around, given where the Red Sox are projected to be, and given that there's a handful of teams out there that could use a capital C closer. I'm curious if Jansen does get traded, or if he's hurt and still on this roster, is Chris Martin the obvious fallback option for you to step up and take over the closer role in Boston?
Yeah, it won't be the highest stuff closer in the league. And it's a little bit more belt on command than you'd expect from a reliever, but he's a good pitcher, and it's not a super deep bullpen.
Yeah, it seems like he's been the favorite to be that guy. I see him getting picked up in a lot of drafts really late, with the assumption that we could see a late spring Jansen trade, kind of like that Craig Kimbrel trade we saw a few years back between the Padres and Braves, I think it was, that hooked up on that deal. That was fun. That was like the Sunday night going into opening day when that trade went down.
I think we'll have some stuff like that this year just because of the holdouts with the free agents. I mean, you just think of Matt Chapman signing in San Francisco this week, and, you know, does that mean a J.D. Davis trade? I think there's going to be some late trades as these last two signings happen.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Looking at the bats now, kind of working in reverse today, you still got Rafael Devers as the cornerstone of this lineup. Tristan Casas has moved up as a top 100 player by ADP. Projections have him in the 240s for batting average. I think there's a little more room for growth there.
They're also super light on runs and RBI. I guess they're assuming he's going to get platooned. I mean, I get the risk that he's platooned, but I kind of doubt that he is platooned. But it's just because he seems like they think of him as a cornerstone bat going forward.
Yeah, I think that's where that projection comes in a little light. It's almost like a soft platoon is projected. Maybe the occasional tough lefty is something that gives him a day off, but I think you want to see what he can do and let him show you that he can handle that split in the long run, especially if this is a little bit of a down year for you. The mid-tier options in drafts are all very interesting for this team. Jarren Duran sitting right around pick 150. There's power, there's speed, there's a good average projection. I think it's a question of how do you make the pieces fit in the Red Sox outfield, right? I think there's a couple different ways they can go. Sedan Rafaela, one of their young options, could be their best defensive center fielder by far. If Rafaela's on the roster, he's probably the regular option in center. That puts Jarren Duran likely in right. Tyler O'Neill would play left, and Masataka Yoshida is likely to be the regular DH. Then Willier Abreu sort of works as the extra outfielder. But if Rafaela were to go down, I think Duran has to play some center field to begin the season, and Willier Abreu likely platoons in a corner with someone like a Rob Refsnyder just to sort of get through the early part of the season.
Yeah, The interesting thing from a strength training standpoint is that Rafaela leads the team in plate appearances. Again, that could just change today if he doesn't play and somebody else plays. William Abreu is right behind him. But I don't see Tyler O'Neill on here.
He's there. Eno is looking into the sun and his laptop is behind a fence, which... It's amazing.
But I don't see Tyler O'Neill with plate appearances.
He's got 487 plate appearances projected. Oh,
no,
you're looking at the list.
I know.
I'm
just talking about spring training ones. I think he hasn't. I don't think he's played yet.
I'll investigate that for just a moment.
Anyway, Rafaela has played. And I think, just sort of reading the tea leaves, I kind of think he's headed towards that. Also, just my personal opinion is that Duren is not a center fielder. And I think that you're kind of seeing some of that play out in Boston. So I think he's going to be a corner outfielder. I think he's a really good player. And he's going to have power and speed and a decent batting average. And so I don't think there's any risk of taking him, honestly. Like, I think that that's enough of a player offensively that you can just whatever plan you come up with for the Boston outfield, Duren should be in it. And Yoshida is going to be in it. So, I think those two are really strong picks no matter what. And Yoshida, for what it's worth, is of this class of player that I found to be undervalued in drafts. The quote-unquote empty batting average, Kwan, Arias, Yoshida, Verdugo, I think I've seen them all drop in drafts according to their auction value. And I think that's probably because people are chasing home runs and stolen bases. But if you do something like I did, where you kind of are heavy on homers and stolen bases early and your batting average is not a strength, you can pretty much bet that one of those guys will fall for you. And the worst case scenario, Jeff McNeil is there too. So these are all guys that have positive value no matter what league you're in, they'll drop. I think the way it's going to work out is the first way you talked about with William Abreu as the fourth outfielder. But I do acknowledge that there's some risk that Tyler O'Neill is a part-time player. And that takes some of the bloom off the rose for me because I had thought of him as kind of going into a great situation and being a bit of a sleeper this year in drafts.
I like him because he goes just outside the top 200. I think you can be wrong and it's not going to crush you. And I think there's a chance that Tyler O'Neill nudges into that everyday sort of role. It's at least possible. So it's balanced out where the risk reward makes sense. Yoshida's profile, I think, is actually very similar to Vaughn Grissom's known profile, but Grissom, being younger, has a few paths to get a lot better, right? If you said, what's the median expectation for Vaughn Grissom, who now has a run to be the everyday second baseman, so long as he's healthy? He's got a small injury this spring that may slow him down. Maybe.
That's that youth you're talking about. Yoshida plus 5 stolen bases.
Or you could see Grissom maybe unlock a little more power. Like, there's just a few ways he could get better, but he's that kind of player right out of the box. And after the first week or so of the season, he's going to be second base and shortstop eligible. So you're going to get a little more versatility. So I like Grissom where he goes as a similar kind of player.
He's dropping in drafts because he has a hamstring injury, and the current note says he's not sure if he's going to be ready for opening day. That's worrisome. I can't claim that it's not. But it's also still fairly early for a team that doesn't have sold games in Seoul. It's March 5. I feel like we could get a good update in a week, and then his draft stock's going to rise again. In TGFBI, I was able to leave him on the board with Jonathan India and Zach Neto so that I could get my man Seth Lugo. and I needed him because I felt like Seth Lugo was the last starter on the board that I would want to start more than 75% of the time. I think that's something you should think about when you're looking at starters near the end of when you're looking at that last tier. Where's that tier? That tier for me is, do you start him 75%+ of the time or not? And I think there is a difference there. Like a Tanner Houck, I don't think I want to have to start him 75% of the time. So he's below that tier. Any case, I left him on the board, and Vaughn Grissom was the one that came back to me. And, I'm a little bit worried, and so I put Grissom on my bench. But I think he could be fine by opening day. That's just the first update we've gotten. So, and he's an exciting young player in terms of batting average and, kind of 15-15 upside, I think.
And the actual shortstop, we discussed a bit more on the shortstop preview about a month or so ago. Trevor Story projected by the Bat X for a 240, 2020, 68, and 62 for the runs and RBIs. A little light because the playing time is only at 513 plate appearances. Trevor Story will play more than that if he's healthy. There's a chance Trevor Story is an everyday sort of player. He's paid like one. They brought him in to be one. Now he's finally healthy. The thing that's led me to Story a bunch of times is if you wait at shortstop and you wait on speed because you target power early, I think Story can be a little bit more like a Duran where you get 15 to 18 homers, but 25 to 30 steals. I think in this environment, Trevor Story is going to run and run often.
Yeah, you look back and you see that 10 raw steals. That's why rates are always, it's in the name of the podcast, but rates are always superior to counting stats because you see that 10 stolen bases and you think, oh, well, you know, but 10 came in 168 plate appearances. That would pace out to, you know, 35, 40. You know, so that, and that was in a year where he's trying to come back from injury. So, I agree with you. I think he's a fun late pick. I think the projections are a little light on the playing time. You have something like Zips, with 630 plate appearances, gets to 23 homers and 23 steals, still light on steals. So Story, another fun bat, in this Red Sox lineup.
Yeah, my life at shortstop has revolved around some combination of Anthony Volpe, Trevor Story, or Willy Adames based on what's been happening so far.
Yeah, I've got a lot of Zach Neto.
And the late dart from this team that I like is Sedan Rafael, because I think his defense will carry his playing time. If you can get him in that round 25 to 30 range of a 15-team league, take the shot because there is power, there's speed. The question is, how quickly will the approach adapt to top-level pitching, right? There could be some short-term downside, but the glove carries playing time.
High whiff rates for his type of player in the minors. I mean, you're talking about a guy who walks 5% of the time. You kind of expect him to strike out 15% of the time, you know? Just be kind of one of those high contact, you know, swings at everything kind of guys. He's been running whiff rates above 15%. So that's the con side of the Rafael argument is, what if the strikeout rate doesn't go down much from 31? He's projected to get down to 23, but what if it's 28? You know, if it's a 28% strikeout rate, he might be running a 220 batting average. There might be, you know, calls for change at center field.
Or at least it'd be enough to keep him buried at the bottom of the lineup. That would be the other thing. And that would have a negative impact on the run and RBI production.
Probably.
Yeah. All right, so here's the question. Pecota has the win total projected at 79.4 for the Red Sox. Last place in the AL East, too hot, too cold, or just right?
It has come to my attention that I've said too hot too often. I mean, too cold too often. I don't know. I still think it's too cold. I understand the pitching is in a bad state, but this lineup is exciting and has a lot of young players in it that I like. I think they're going to mash their way to 81, 82 wins.
Yeah, I have a slightly too cold on the Red Sox as well. It's not egregious. So I guess it depends on what happens at the deadline, you know, how the young players come along, a couple little things like that. If they're sellers, then yes, I think the number ends up being right or slightly too high. But I think they're going to be good enough to talk themselves into possibly making some additions.
Yeah, I'm betting against the Jansen trade myself.
I don't think they're going to do it now. It's like, just wait until July if you're not good.
Everyone's optimistic now. You know, it's like if you're in a keeper league and you're trying to trade prospects for hitters right now, this is the wrong time to do it. Everybody's looking at their team being like, I could do something.
Optimism is in the air.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's move over to the NL East. We're going to kind of work from the bottom part of the division. And on our last team preview, we're going to have a loaded one because we're going to have the Braves, Phillies, and Mets. So we're going to start with the Marlins, the fourth place team in the NL East by projections. And of course, this is a team that has dealt with some injuries, especially on the pitching side. But let's start with the bats, where their best hitter has missed time pretty much every season. It's Jazz Chisholm Jr. I've looked at him as a low average 30-30 guy. Projections see him in a very similar light. He's a guy that I like that I haven't drafted yet. So you know, there's still time to fix that, almost a month where we can get Jazz Chisholm onto our rosters. Do you think there's still another level with Jazz, or do you think, even though it's been around a lot of injuries, what you see is what you get from a skills perspective as far as the K rate and the batting average risk that he's shown to this point in his career?
We've seen some change in his chase rate over time. And so I am wondering if there is a peak season in him where he walks 9 or 10% of the time even. I think that's possible with his skill set, and maybe gets the strikeout rate down to 27-28%. I mean, if he does both of those things, which I think would be attainable through regular at-bats through a whole season, you know, like just have one of those seasons where you're healthy all year and you can refine your approach as opposed to like having to come back and get your timing back every time, you know. So, you know, if he does those two things, if he does have a full season, I think you could see a peak season from him where he hits 275 with 25, 30 homers, maybe even 30 steals. So that sort of upside is worth chasing, and the price has gotten lower and lower every year with the injuries. So, you know, we're not talking about a guy who's in his 30s yet. And at 26, this is like the perfect time to have that perfect season.
Yeah, and the Bat X has a 24 homer, 35 stolen base projection. You don't find a lot of guys that have that who are available outside the first few rounds. Usually the ADP comes in somewhere close to 60 with Jazz Chisholm Jr. So player I like, player I don't have yet. And the other weird thing in his profile is you see a lot of fluctuations in his ground ball rate. You see something as low as 37.1% back when he debuted, all the way up to 47.8% last year. But big swings from year to year. I think some of that is the result of not being healthy and being out there consistently.
And lastly, you know, there's a, I think he's a second rounder right now, Luis Robert, Robert's going, what, in the second or third?
Very, yeah, kind of
end of
30.
The turn. Yeah.
Yeah, turn.
And, And what's ADP on Jazz right now?
About 60.
That's 30 picks. Don't they seem like similar players?
Similar risk. And I mean, Luis Robert's got some injury concerns too. Both are on teams where you strikeouts, worry a little bit about the supporting cast. Both have that swing and miss. I think Robert's shown a higher batting average floor even with the plate skills. So I think that's probably part of how you bridge the gap with the differences between the two players. And slightly less time on the IL. Like that's how you kind of get there. But yeah, I mean, if you like one of these profiles, you probably like the other. And we always like getting a little bit of a deal. Given the way we like to build teams, we're always looking at starting pitching in that round 2-3 turn, like that pick 30 range. So that's kind of your, hey, I can wait and get something very similar the next time it comes back to me at the 4-5 turn instead.
Exactly,
that's
yeah.
The best case, I think, for Jazz at this point. And especially if you've got that bonus from getting Acuna first, your batting average foundation is even stronger. That makes you feel even better about taking that little bit of batting average risk with Jazz Chisholm. As far as the supporting cast goes, Luis Arraez, we've talked about him recently on the show as someone that if you need to take advantage of cheap power late, it's nice to have Arias out there around pick 150 as someone that can lift your average and help offset some of that damage. I don't know if you're going to get much in terms of homers or steals from Arias himself, but you get a high-volume player that's going to do a lot of good, at least in that one category, with pretty good run and RBI production as well.
I think I actually prefer Masataka Yoshida just a tiny bit, because I do think he could hit 15, 18 homers, and I don't think Arias will. So there's a little bit of a difference there, but I do find myself with certain builds, certain teams, reaching for these guys, and auction calculator says I'm doing the right thing, so I'm going to believe it. You know, his skills seem to port over year to year. I don't really love the rest of this team for sleepers or where they're at. You know, I'm probably going to come in too cold on the, too hot on this team, because I don't know. I don't see it. I have some shares of Jesus Sanchez, who, you know, has power. But he doesn't have a great approach, and it doesn't seem like he's going to hit for batting average, and seems likely also to be platooned. So he's not a guy who is really that great in weekly lineups. He's kind of more like an auto new or like a daily lineup situation. And that just leaves like Brian De La Cruz, who's, you know, not a center fielder, but kind of has a center fielder bat. Tim Anderson, we just is like seems like a big question mark, you know, and we've just seen the power just fall off and fall off and fall off. If he hits three homers and steals 18 bases, like how much value is he really gonna have?
If it's that bad, then yeah, that's a problem. I think Tim Anderson landed in a situation where he'll play a lot. That's a good thing. You can take a chance. If you don't like what you see from a power perspective, you can actually cut him. Right, because he's being drafted like an MI. He's not being drafted like a shortstop anymore.
I've drafted him along with Jose Caballero in like a couple places where it's like, one of you guys, please step up and steal me, you know, 25 bags from the shortstop position.
Yeah, one of you, please be good. I mean, Tim Anderson had a run of four straight seasons before last year where he hit 300 or better. And that was usually with 2020 power speed production just sort of dinged by lost time. There's some injury risk there. I'm okay with him where he goes because, I like I said, you could just let him go if it doesn't work out. I do end up with De La Cruz on a decent number of teams because I think he's going to play a ton in this outfield. I've been waiting for third, fourth, and fifth outfielders a lot just based on the way I've been building teams. I don't think there's really like a categorical weakness. I guess De La Cruz won't run that much, but it's a little bit like the Austin Hayes profile with less competition for playing time. It's kind of the way I look at Brylan De La Cruz, where you just feel okay about him. It's not a
Austin
pick that
Hayes
wins your league.
Undrafted in my auto new draft last night, 5x5, 12 team.
You hear the footsteps, though, of all the other outfielders coming. And I just think unless he gets traded, that's going to make it even more difficult to trust that playing time for the full season. We've talked about Josh Bell on this show for years as someone who's just up and down. The projection's not bad. He's fine as a corner infield filler, but you really don't want to rely on him. It's more of a last resort sort of play.
I think he's, you know what he is almost? A bat streamer, maybe. Maybe somebody that you like pick up because he's in a certain park for, you know, weekend or whatever.
Yeah, for 12 teamers, maybe that's the ideal thing. And a 15 teamer, you just want to do better because there's opportunities
to
do that.
But I think bat streaming in 15 teams, like he would be a great one, I think.
We sidestepped Jake Berger a little bit. I mean, the power by projection looks pretty real, and he might even be a slight bargain based on where he's going right now. Third base gets a little funny in that range. A lot of times you're thinking about Berger versus Alec Bohm or Ke'Bryan Hayes. Maybe Isak Paredes is hanging around there. I think we generally like the rest of that group more. But is Berger out of place in that tier, even if you put him last of that bunch?
This type of profile is, you can only have a couple of them on your team. I'm surprised he's projected for 250 batting average, actually, because I think that with a 17% whiff rate on that 27.6% strikeout rate last year, Berger, the arrow on his strikeouts might be up, you know? And we've seen him have 35% strikeout rates, 30% strikeout rates. And right now in spring training, I know it's 13 plate appearances, but 46% strikeout rate with zero walks. So it's a grip it and rip it approach with really good batted ball stats, but it is a certain type that I think you can only really have like one on your team. So if you've made room for him and you can handle the 230 batting average with your 30 homers, then put him on your team.
I tend to think I can find the next Jake Berger around pick 300 or later. You know, Matt Wallner type, Nelson Velasquez, might be at a different position, but I'd rather take that chance with the elevated K rate, low walk rate masher. I'd rather do that late than do it in the mid rounds.
And maybe at a different position, because third base is one of those positions where it gets thin faster than people expect. And if you put Berger in there and it doesn't work out, you may not go to the wire and find much.
I would say of the late options, Nick Gordon's the one that I think is going to play. And I think because he was showing more signs of growth before he ultimately got hurt and missed most of last season in Minnesota, there's a chance there's a little bit more there still. Kind of a post hype sleeper, a guy that people were excited about a few years ago that maybe did unlock something, but then had it sort of wiped off the slate by the amount of missed time that he just had in his last season with the Twins. They'll find playing time for him.
It's a little weird that he's a lefty, just given the handedness of their outfield. There's no natural platoon partner for him. I do think he's going to make the team, though, just based on they're kind of, with bats, they're kind of in talent acquisition, you know, where it's just like we're going to try and get every bat that might be worth anything on our roster for opening day and kind of sort it out after that.
The strength on this team continues to be starting pitching. You get two inside the top 100 by ADP, Yuri Perez, Jesus Luzardo. You know, Luzardo's kind of found that next level since joining the Marlins, and Yuri Perez could be someone we're talking about as a top 5, top 10 fantasy starter down the road. It might not be that far away because he's electric, and we saw them push more innings onto his arm than expected, so it's much closer to a full workload for Perez than I would have expected for this season, at least within the range of outcomes compared to what I would have forecasted if we were doing this exercise last year.
Yeah, he's absolutely, I think, in that Grayson Rodriguez, Bobby Miller, you know, best young aces trio. I have him third of the group just because I do think Grayson probably gets the most innings. Bobby has the best arsenal, all like in terms of width and depth and excellence. But I've drafted all three of them. And to some extent, I've put them in a group and just been like, you know, if I have a turn coming, if I get one of these and not the other two, then that's fine for me, you know? So I'm all in on Yuri Perez as much as, you know, that grouping goes. I have not got a single share of Jesus Luzardo. And I find that we have a use case where we showed what it is for him if he loses a half tick or a tick and what sort of results he puts out there. It's not a good shape on the fastball, so I feel like if he goes back down to 93.5, 94, you know, you're going to see, you know, bad results because his secondary is not even as good as Braxton Garrett's secondary. You know, it's a soft package for me that I think won't age well. So I'm going to be wrong for a couple of years, and then I'll finally be right, and I'll tell you guys all about it. that's where I've decided to be. Braxton Garrett, and this is goes back to a little bit why I'm a little pessimistic about this team. Braxton Garrett, shoulder soreness, thinks maybe opening day still in there for him, but you know, not a sure thing. Trevor Rogers hasn't even pitched in camp yet. Max Meyer has pitched and AJ Puck has pitched, so they have two replacements ready to go, but one was a reliever last year and one had Tommy John surgery last year. So I just don't know how much those guys have to give in terms of innings. And then behind them, which seems ridiculous to talk about, but it does matter, teams use 10 pitchers. There's Yonny Chirinos and Ryan Weathers, who I just think have pretty awful stuff. Just to be awesome, just to be honest, you know.
Yeah, they're just the guys that kind of fill in the gaps. It sounds like Garrett may have to start the season on the IL, even though at this point, Skip Schumacher said he feels great. Like he's progressing really well from shoulder soreness.
He just hasn't pitched, I guess.
Just not enough time. Trevor Rogers is actually pitching right now.
Hey, there we go.
Got a couple scoreless innings in today, so he's
kind of on track. He's ready. He's a stud. He's a stud. Sleeper. Get him.
But yeah, the Edward Cabrera situation, you've talked about having some faith that maybe he'll put it together this year. He should have a pretty open path to a rotation spot to begin the season. Max Meyer looked really good in that first outing against the Yankees. I think if you have these injuries for Garrett, and maybe if Rodgers is slowed down, Meyer probably opens the year in the rotation if they think he's good to go coming out of camp. And then AJ Puck, I was just looking, he started against the Yankees on Monday night. This was a little bit of a different arsenal. I think we were talking about him a bit yesterday as part of a Would You Rather. We saw a four-seamer, a sinker, a splitter, a slider, and a sweeper.
Oh, so two breaking balls and a splitter. Okay. I can believe in this. I can get with this. It's a splitter's a little bit of a weird choice for me given his arm slot. But two sliders could be the way out too as well.
Yeah, so I think there's a few different ways for him to make it work. Six Ks in three scoreless innings on Monday night. It was mostly a B lineup for the Yankees, but I just thought the depth of the arsenal from Puck in that outing was worth mentioning as something that was probably a little bit better than we had previously expected. We talked about Tanner Scott back on the reliever preview episode. I know he's had at least one rough out in this spring. That stuff number is insane. A 146.8 stuff plus number from Scott. You know, the command is the problem. Typical of a lot of top-end relievers. That's the question. But do you think Scott holds this job all season long? Is he their capital C closer from start to finish?
I haven't been able to pull the trigger on him just because we've seen what happens when the command is not there. And I don't know which year it's going to be, you know what I mean? I feel like if I could get 1 week of results, I would, in the major leagues, in the start of the season, I would feel better about taking him, you know what I mean? I don't know.
I wish it was 3 or 4 rounds cheaper. I see guys that, like Clay Holmes, even Evan Phillips, that go in the same tier that are on better teams. I'd rather just have guys on better teams.
Yeah. I prefer Holmes, and, you know, not only from the team perspective, just from the pitcher perspective. So
you teased this one a little bit already. The Pecota projection, 80 wins even, fourth place in the NL East. Too hot, too cold, or just right for the 2024 Marlins?
Too hot for me. I think this is not a good year for them.
Yeah, I just don't think they're going to score enough runs. I think that's going to be part of the problem. Pitching might be fine with some of the young guys coming through, but I don't like this lineup very much. I do think Jazz, if he gets 140 games, does get to that 30-30, I will have Jazz somewhere. That is a guarantee at this point. But I'm with you. I could see it being just right, but it seems like a tick on the high side.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Maybe part of this depends on how you feel about the Nationals as a team that's projected to be very bad, dead last in the division by more than 20 games, which is, I don't know, like as we look more closely at it, maybe it will make some sense. But let's start with the bats. CJ Abrams, heavily discussed earlier in this draft season, still sitting with an ADP inside the top 40. The projection from the bat X is really nice. 17 homers, 35 steals. That steals total might be light given how much he ran last season, right? I mean, this is one of many players you look at and say, hey, he ran more last year. Why would he run less unless you're projecting, you know, some kind of role change or some kind of skills loss? And generally, I don't see anyone projecting lower OBPs for CJ Abrams in 2024.
Yeah, I guess if we had Derek Cardi on here, if we had a modeler on here, Dan Zimborski, they would just tell you that, high steals seasons always regress the next year. And that it's a little bit like that thing I told you about Sky Colkman saying that, like, if you have a bunch of 200 inning pitchers, you can expect 180 the next year. If you group a bunch of guys who steal 45 bags or 40 bags, you can expect 30 or 35 bags from them. That's how the projections work. But one thing that I think that they're missing beyond just what C.J. Abrams, what matters about C.J. Abrams, is the fact that the stolen base success rate last year was 80%. I think every team is going to look at that number and say, hey, break even is like 73, 74%. We can steal more, you know? So I actually think the league is going to steal more this year. That means, A, you need more steals in your draft than you think, maybe. You know, and B, yes, there's going to be steals out there. And in the case of Abrams, maybe the league situation, you know, kind of undoes any regression that he would have had.
Yeah. I think the other thing with C.J. Abrams that's kind of interesting to me with the projections, though, is that he hit a 300 OBP last year. Walked 5.2% of the time, low walk rates from AAA and above these last two seasons, but better walk rates in brief time at AA back in 2021. He was always young for his level. He's still young right now. C.J. Abrams just turned 23 in October. It's weird to me that the projections spit out only a slight improvement. There's a chance C.J. Abrams gets a little better or even a lot better, and that's never going to be baked into a projection. So he started off this draft season as someone that at ADP seemed a little high to me. I'm warming up to it. It kind of depends on what else is happening. It's hard for me to take C.J. Abrams ahead of Bo Bichette, but they're pretty different players as far as what you're getting. So if you've got a power foundation with no speed and you have to counteract that, I think Abrams makes a lot of sense. He was 47 for 51 as a base dealer with a 300 OBP. So maybe he maxed out his running opportunities last year, but if he posts a 315 or a 320, add a few more bags. That's possible. And the 18 homers he hit last year came from a guy that was projected to eventually have like 55 grade raw power. So this is not like fake power. This is actually a guy that could get bigger and stronger as he continues to bulk up on that frame.
Yeah. My computer is running out of battery. Yes.
Probably cooking in the sun.
Yeah, that too. One thing I would say is his ground ball rates were in line with what he did in the minor leagues last year. It was the first season with the 50% ground ball rate that was out of line. So, you know, he does not seemingly have a ground ball problem. And a 112.5 max EV, that fits a lot more with the 50 grade raw power. So I hear you, man. This guy could hit 25 homers this year. I don't think that's out of the possibility. And this could really be a breakout moment for him. I want to big up another young player on this team. In James Wood, who I increasingly think will make this opening day roster. You know, we played the game with Sedano Rafaela in the plate appearance and saying, oh, well, he's one ahead of Willy Abreu or whatever. That is not the case in Washington. James Wood has 25 plate appearances already. Guess who has the second most plate appearances on the team? Lane Thomas was 17.
Ah,
that's not going to be fixed in one game or two. That's James Wood getting every at-bat he can get. Dylan Cruz has 15. I think Dylan Cruz is going back down, and James Wood is making the team. And here's the other part of the argument. They would love to win a Rookie of the Year and get a pick.
I mean, you could probably justify giving both a shot, but I think what happened that was surprising was Dylan Cruz moved all the way up to AA last year, same summer he was drafted, and hit a little bit of a wall in the 20 games that he played there. You know, didn't homer, hit 208 with a 318 OBP, slugged 278. He wasn't striking out uncontrollably. He struck out 22.4%. My question for you would be, how much does the swing and miss that we saw from Wood, 33.7% K rate over 87 games at AA last year, how much does that give you concerns about batting average risk in the short term? The power's legit. There's power, there's speed. He's going to be a fun player for a long time. Are we going to have a bumpy road for him to unlock all of those tools?
Yeah, I mean, he's a tall guy with long levers, long strikeout rates in the minor leagues. I think there will be an adjustment period, and it may happen in the major leagues. So I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, this spring training means he's going to be good. I'm just saying that I think he gets the roster spot. Also, part of it is he's up against Jesse Winker and Joey Gallo. Jesse Winker, no matter what you think of them, is not a good defender. And so I think he's a better fit at DH or first base at this point. You have Joey Meneses, who was an older first baseman, didn't show power commensurate with first baseman last year. And, you know, he could lose his job fairly easily. So I think the Jesse Winker, Joey Gallo, Joey Meneses, Stone Garrett battle is probably about DH in first base, maybe fourth outfielder.
Yeah, I think there are a couple kind of interesting depth players around this team. Garrett would be one of them. If he's completely healthy, he's working back from an ankle injury. If he plays more than expected while they sort of wait for these young guys to finish up in the upper levels of the minor leagues, I think Garrett could surprise some people. More of a deeper league sort of play. You know, they got Nick Senzel. Does have options. They brought in Nick Senzel to be a third baseman. It's nice that he's back on the dirt. He's got just a brutal run of like kind of bad luck on top of an injury history. If he's actually healthy, he's a versatile player for deeper leagues. Luis Garcia could be kind of interesting as a former prospect who did get a demotion in the second half of last year, but does a little bit of everything. Probably doesn't hurt you in any category, so he's kind of interesting to me.
He's a good like draft and hold like third, second baseman, or maybe even second if you're in a pinch.
Yeah, and you mentioned Meneses. I mean, I think he was hurt last year. He played through a knee injury and didn't really get to as much power as we expected. He might actually hang on a little bit longer to a roster spot than I previously expected, knowing that he wasn't completely healthy last year. But you look behind Abrams. Abrams is the star. Thomas was great last year. Kiebert Ruiz is very solid. I think Ruiz, where he goes, is fine. I find myself always missing Lane Thomas.
Moreno's going ahead of Ruiz in a lot of drafts, and I'll take Ruiz.
I mean, Ruiz has just done it for longer.
Yeah.
Similar profile. I think the playing time is super safe. The lineup position is really good. I don't think it's going to change a ton, even if they start bringing guys up. So I'm in on Kiebert Ruiz. If I sort of miss out on those top-tier catchers and I want someone with a really nice floor, maybe it's Ruiz plus Logan Ohapi. Ruiz plus Bo Naylor is my approach at that position.
Yeah, I like that. Batting average with power.
Moving on to the pitchers,
I'd like to interject something real quick.
Yeah.
I just like to pass. Sorry, you were saying
you just want to like completely pass on the pitching.
We gotta talk about it. I'm just saying that's my initial reaction.
See, I don't know if you got to the bottom of the rundown, but the literal only question I had was, will you consider anyone other than Mackenzie Gore and Hunter Harvey?
Other than Mackenzie Gore and Hunter Harvey, no.
Yeah, well, are any of these guys on your radar at all? And this includes Josiah Gray, Patrick Corbin, Jake Irvin, Trevor Williams, Jonna Doan, Zach Davies, Jackson Rutledge, Cade Cavalli coming off of an injury, and then Kyle Finnegan, who might be the closer to start the year until Harvey usurps him for the job.
I don't want the guy who loses the job to the guy who gets the job, so I'm drafting Hunter Harvey over Finnegan. Josiah Gray has actually outperformed his stuff, and so maybe the stuff projection is bad. It's a 5.24, you know, PPERA. You know, he's figured things out, and he's again working on his mix and adding pitches, and you know, kind of a wide arsenal guy that's trying to stay away from his four seam because it's such a homer pitch. But it doesn't really describe somebody I want, especially in that park. It's specifically a hard park for homers. So it's I don't think that he's necessarily somebody I'm targeting. Cade Cavalli is the only name that made me pause, honestly. I think what we saw from him was he got to the big leagues and he threw as hard as he could because he was in the big leagues. And I just don't know. I think that had some deleterious effect on his health, obviously, because he went back down with an injury, and then on his command. So I don't know. Does he need to throw as hard as he can all the time in order to like max out his stuff and make that work? Or is he going to come back from injury and find a place where he can have more command and make his pitches work? Cade Cavalli is a ... Everybody else is a hard no.
As far as Gore goes, like, have you drafted him at all yet this draft season? He's done a whole bunch of leagues already.
I tried to get him in a keeper league in the offseason. I tried to offer Jorge Polanco for him and was told that the other team valued Gore higher. I was surprised by that, honestly. I had thought long and hard about before offering Jorge Polanco for him because, you know, Jorge Polanco is an everyday player and Gore hasn't really established a great baseline of results. But I think it's also kind of fair because Gore is so young. He's 24. He has a great fastball, and he struck out guys. So you're just asking him to tweak a secondary, add a secondary, maybe have better strategy. He hasn't been throwing his fastball high enough, I don't think. And I think that has to do with the coaching he's gotten. But Sean Doolittle is his coach now, and Sean Doolittle is the king of the high fastballs. So I'm hoping that with Doolittle's tutelage, Gore can go far.
I like that one. Doolittle's tutelage. Yeah, the problem has been the four-seamer. 17 home runs allowed by a four-seamer. He throws 95. That does seem more like a location problem. 7.1 feet of extension. Yeah. So as long as he's getting ample ride, as long as it's not a dead zone fastball, he should be able to get better results. Two breaking pitches with the curveball and the slider. Throws the occasional change. This could still be a breakout pitcher. So I think if you want to be excited about a Nat starter, it's Mackenzie Gore by a few miles. I'm with you. I don't see anybody else that I like unless Cavalli comes back and is healthy. And the bullpen situation, why would you draft the guy that you think is going to lose the job? Yeah, Hunter Harvey makes all the sense in the world. Better stuff than Finnegan.
Cheaper.
Could actually get you 25 saves, even on a rebuilding team.
Cheaper. If you're wrong, move on.
Yeah, easy cut if Hunter Harvey doesn't get that opportunity early in the season. Hinted at this at the top. 58.6 wins, more than 20 below what the Marlins are projected for.
Hey, dude.
Too hot, too cold, or just right for the Nationals?
Too hot? The reason is they're sellers at the deadline, I guess. I don't know who they're
selling. Even getting rid of?
Yeah, Finnegan? I don't know.
I mean, that's not going to change their
It's also
their
like such an absurdly low projection that I can't. I don't know. Too hot seems like just being rude.
I think it's just right.
Just right. Yeah.
They're bad. When we put the pitching card up, I was looking at it saying, is this is worse than the White Sox? Because the White Sox have Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease is better than Mackenzie Gore. They have a couple interesting bullpen arms in Chicago. It's almost as bad as Colorado. Like if you took the Nats rotation and projected them at Coors Field, it'd be only better because of Mackenzie Gore.
Ooh, there might be a bold prediction in there for me.
Yeah,
and I predict that the Colorado Rockies rotation will have a better ERA than the Nationals. Spicy.
You want to go out there on that limb? That's the bold prediction hill that you would like to put it all out there on?
Got to look at the numbers first.
All right. Well, I think this is a good place to cut it off because I think Eno's laptop might be melting in the sun. Yep. Eno's forehead also in danger
also
right
frying.
Now. So we'll try to protect that a little bit. TheAthletic.com/ratesandbarrels will get you a subscription. $2 a month for the first year. This is a great time to get in. Fresh, updated starting pitcher rankings on the site as of this morning. So you can check those out. We'll talk about those a bit on a future episode. And just as a heads up, you can join the Discord. It is open. We'll make sure we put the link in the show description, so be sure to jump in there. Find league. You can have a team chat. Everything you're looking for all in one place. Enjoy some time with the other listeners of our show. On Twitter, you can find Eno at EnoSaris. You can find me at Derek Van Riper. The pod is at Rates and Barrels. That's going to do it for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We are back with you on Thursday.
Thanks for listening.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.